Welcome to this video. Today I have a very special interview guest I was looking forward to very much. He's a super experienced coffee roaster and coffee professional. We're going to talk about coffee roasting, about green coffee, and also about the Link Nucleus Link Roaster. And the person I'm talking about is Sam Cora. Hello, Sam. Nice to have you.
Hey. Hey, Inga. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
So, Sam, maybe to give people a bit a background or an idea about who you are and what you've done in coffee, can you share a bit your story on your coffee story and what you're doing now at the moment?
Yeah, of course. So, to the present day, if I'm thinking, I've been working in coffee for 19 years. My original background was actually to go into wine. I was it's my father's business to be. He's a wine exporter. I was trained from a young age to go into more of a sommelier style practice. And I guess I accidentally fell into coffee in the beginning. I think like all of us, the draw card was around latte art. I grew a passion for it. And early on, that's what drew me into the competition scenes. I had a lot of videos. If people want a good laugh, go look up a video channel, Bacco555888. And the faceless individual pouring patterns with myself. But I think that really opened up specialty coffee for me. I met a lot of great people from a very small town in Australia, and specialty coffee was really just emerging. So from latte art, it took me to the competition world. From competition world, it made me realize that I didn't know a lot about the back end of coffee, how it's produced, where it comes from, the roasting, and I'm always intrigued into, you know, working for Honor Coffee. It was a very small company at that time, I think 4 employees, and, you know, was thrust into roasting at a very early age and a time and era where there wasn't the same level of detail and knowledge that we now have the luxury of. So I think at least my understanding of roasting was very hands-on, and you fail every time and you learn from it and then you react. And I think from that, it gave me a healthy appreciation to always look for different ways in which we can manipulate the roast and develop a style and understanding of, you know, the reaction and counter reaction, and to go against your gut and what it tells you and just explore. I was roasting for probably head roaster for Honor for around a decade. And then, you know, in a more recent role, stepped out into green purchasing and coffee programming. As I said, mentioned, very heavily invested in competition space. I've worked with several baristas in my time, and brewers, which has been always very rewarding. Some of them going on to success. I think we've roasted coffee, or I roasted coffee for 3 world champions now. Like, yeah, not that that really matters, but it's kind of always nice to see when you have a theory and an approach to a coffee, and it's rewarded, you know, by the excellent work of the people behind presenting it. Myself, I was a competitor. I competed in brewing competition in 2017. I was the Australian champion that year and went on to second place in Budapest. And that was a educational exercise because our company was terrible at roasting filter coffee. And my whole competition drive was for feedback. Like, as you'll hear from the Link story, I'm very driven by feedback and data, because from that, I think we all can learn and improve what we do. So it's a little bit about me. Yeah.
Nice. So you've been roasting for, you say, more than a decade, and probably coffee roasting or also the coffee culture in Australia or around the world has changed quite a lot in the meantime. So what is a bit like, what were the biggest learning that you had during your roasting time?
Yeah.
The biggest changes that you've seen?
Yeah, I think the thing for me, it's kind of like when I was roasting, I imagine it's what it's like before. People who came before and are used to the internet, because when I was roasting, you know, you may have had a thermocouple hooked up to a reader to give you a readout, but there was no such thing as predictive roasting technology, monitoring, live kind of software that we now have all the luxury of. ROR and all those wonderful terminologies and understandings that we have now of the different phases of roasting were very undeveloped in a raw platform. And I think, yeah, it was very intuitive base roasting. And what I think that we've witnessed now is the evolution of intuition, but also pairing that with science and data and readouts and just relatable context of what we can visualize to actually have a better insight of what's actually happening and make educated decisions, on how to improve.
Yeah. What are the most important, what is your approach to coffee roasting? What are the most important factors you look at, or what are the kind of concept you have behind finding a great coffee profile or great coffee?
I think the idea is, obviously the initial aspects of being a good roaster is experience. I think that when you approach a challenge and you drop that coffee into the roaster, you're really reacting to what's happening and knowing how to react to what's happening or what's about to happen. Takes the skill set, I believe, in roasting, and that's where you can draw upon all of the lessons that you've learned. My approach to roasting is essentially about standardization and repeatability. I like the idea that we can find an aspect or an extraction method that we enjoy and prepare a sample that will suit that method regardless of the process, the country, the variety, etc., just to make it easier for the end user, whether it's yourself or a client or a customer or, a cafe, to have the best and easiest way to move through the coffee world and all the different coffees that we can enjoy. I would say, my theories behind roasting are very time-driven based, connecting that to, reaction and taste and extraction. And, if we're to sum it up, I would say roasting to a extraction point before just having to adjust to a recipe based on your roast.
And when you're doing this roast for the coffee champions that you've been talking about, I mean, how do you approach this? Are you going to try dozens of roasts, or do you have already an idea in your mind, or is it more about the green coffee? What is kind of the magic behind doing?
See, that's an interesting one, because it's a case by case kind of interaction. I would say some of the best coffees I've ever roasted in my life, I've only ever had one go at it. My own competition coffee, I had 4 kilos at that time. The minimum batch size for our roaster was a 15 kilo roast. It was 4 kilos before the thermocouple would actually drop out. And I didn't have a smaller roaster to be able to roast on. So that was kind of all prayers and hope on getting that right, and just hold your breath until the end and you drop it and cool it. That was an interesting kind of approach, because as I said, at that time I was looking to rethink and adjust how I was roasting. I was very heavily based, at least for my own competition copy, on development percentage and that number needing to be above 20% in order to make that profile work, but actually shortening the time frame to make sure it was still vibrant and clean. And where I actually changed my theory quite a lot for filter roasting was development before first crack. The phases that we have, the mallard phases, the drying phases, the sugar browning phases, and focusing on them as being quite important aspects to the development of the coffee's qualities, and not just that development percentage number after. I developed a theory from that, which really stems that in my own personal belief, and let this be known to anyone watching this, that there is no right or wrong way to roast coffee. There's several different interpretations, and everyone has the ability to get great, results out of whatever their theory is. But the way in which my brain worked and how I understand coffee is, I really do believe that what we do before first crack establishes the qualities and the structure of the organic flavors and compounds and, acids and proteins that we're changing in the roasting process. If it has inherent citrus or stone fruit or, those kind of elements, the expression of those we really start to develop in that stage. And then development after crack, or that developer percentage number we talk about, is about rounding out those intensities. You know, a longer or shorter will have a more muted or a, you know, more intense expression of those organic compounds that we developed, you know, prior to first crack. So I really changed my theory in 2017, where I was giving up going for full development percentage and actually stretching out a longer road, delaying the first crack on that particular coffee, but shortening the development percent to 10%. And at that time, that was really foreign for me. I was like, this coffee's going to be way under, grassy. I just didn't expect it to work. I was very much trusting someone who I was working with, and my coach and mentor was Tetsu, who was the previous world champion. We established a dialogue, and, you know, I'm all about collaboration and working with great minds. And he really allowed me to shape, I guess, my filter direction moving forward, that we can think about things a little differently. So that was that approach. It was only one time I roasted it. I basically had to get on the plane and serve it because that's all I had. Others, very similar. For example, Agonista, when I prepared her copies, I had, it was two roasts. And basically for the competition, all of it was being used. I think I got two roasts of 8 kilos. And again, it was one of those things, just, you know, hold your breath, use your experience, trust your gut, and react to what happens. You know, be focused and aware. Different approach if we talk to some of the coffees we've worked on. When I was helping in 2021 for Matt Winston and his campaign in Brewers Cup, obviously that brings us to, you know, some of the earlier developments on the link and the customized nano that we'd made for that one. That was more of a thing where we were back and forwarding, and then we had, I think, maybe 2 kilos of each lot, maybe less. It was not a lot of coffee. And then, you know, 4 days out, we're just like, let's just roast it all. We're happy with this profile, and then, you know, work on our techniques to get it out there. So that one was kind of a little bit more. And I think the beneficial in roasting in smaller batch sizes that allowed us to really refine the expression, which I think the magic of being able to do it in 100 grams and at the location itself was really incredible. Because, you know, often when you go to a competition, you are traveling an extended amount of time with coffee, you know, that goes under a cabin, that experiences different changes in environments and temperatures, and sometimes that degrades from the coffee roast. I'll give you a great example of what happened in that scenario is Hugh Kelly, which is another competitor in Honor. He's competed many times at the Worlds. In 2017, also, he was in the Barista Comp. He used a version of the same coffee that I had prepared for Brewers Cup. And day one and day two, he had, you know, he was number one in the world, you know, great performance, incredible, you know, coffee. And unfortunately, the last day, just in preparation and roast and the time, the age, like, we knew the coffee didn't have it. When he needed it the most, not being able to prepare it in the moment and have a redo, his coffee just lacked, and, you know, still had an amazing result. We're super proud of him, but it was just, unfortunately, we couldn't do anything in that space. So, you know, many different approaches that we do have, and different techniques. I think modern day, we're able to do more in the moment rather than in the past. And make the most out of smaller amounts of coffee.
Yeah. You mentioned before in the campaign of Matt Winton, you've been working with the Cafelogic, which then became also the Nucleus Link.
Yeah.
What was kind of the problem or the motivation? Why you? Because you're kind of the mastermind or the man behind the Nucleus Link as it's standing now in front of us. But
yeah,
why did you come up with this? What was kind of the problem that you saw as a roaster or as a trader?
Yeah. Of course. This is going to be a two-part story. So the first part and the idea behind it, and I'll give you some context, is I was moving away from the base in Canberra, moving up to Sydney to be with my partner. And I needed, obviously, a way to prepare samples and continue my work. I'd been an avid fan for a long time of gas drum roasted coffees. As much as I love the convenience of fluid bed and the transport that you can have and moving around, I found that for me, at least, however I approached them in the past, they were a very volatile and unstable roast where they were amazing for a short period of time, but they tapered off very quickly in expression, or they were incredible, but they didn't quite have the body and the sweetness that I really resonated with for my particular taste preferences. Again, my taste preferences are my taste preferences, and you know, we'll leave it at that. But I was aware that, you know, I need a solution. If I'm making the effort to move away from my base, I do need a way in which we can prepare the coffees. At that time, I had also one of the baristas I'd worked with in Amsterdam was also John Gordon, working on his coffees with him. And he was in collaboration with a pop-up or a startup, Kickstarter, as you'd call it, with team members in Cafe Logic. And he's like, hey, I know you're in the market. You really should give these guys a go. And for me, it was one of those things that I think they'd been on the market for 2 or 3 years that hadn't been, you know, they were emerging and there was some hobbyists using it, but I don't think they'd really been given the fair light that they deserved. And I was like, look, you know, I'll give it a go. When I got the machine, I realized that the work that Chris and the team had done in terms of the engineering and the capabilities were pretty impressive. I was like, you can get an incredible roast out of this. The issue is the handling, the some of the firmware stuff, some of the understanding, you know, from a user who may not be able to use it super effectively, that we can make some refinement. So I went back to them, and I think the thing that really drew me into this is it was so much lower price on the market than anything. And I think that the price itself made it hard to take seriously. But I was like, look, to me, this opens opportunity. Because one thing which I'd been obviously starting to get a little chip on my shoulder with being involved yearly in the competition circles was the sheer expense of competing, the resources needed, the amount of coffee you need to acquire. It really did mean that someone with more resources was more likely to do well. And I think that for a competition that's designed to celebrate someone on their skills, not what they have, I think that I was looking for a change behind that. So, you know, for me, I came up with a pitch to the team. I'm like, look, let's work together. Right now you have great engineering minds and softwares. You know, I'm not going to say I've designed your product, but I have coffee experience. I've worked in these, you know, with several people. I've got, you know, ability to get good data. Like, can we work together on ideas to improve your current version? And our whole goal was not anything more than I wanted to produce great quality. I wanted that unit at its price point to be able to produce great quality. And my testament of how do you test that the quality is being that's coming off that unit is great is, well, have someone utilize coffee prepared, or at least part of their coffee prepared, on the world stage and get the feedback. As I said, like, one thing we shouldn't be scared of is feedback. And from that, any feedback you can get is valuable. After 9 months of refining with them back and forwards, you know, an old team member of Cafe Logic, which is Wayne Burrows, he's a friend of yours as well, I believe, like, we spent countless hours and very long days back and forwards working on improving the system. It was very, you know, we worked our daytime jobs, you know, and then in the evenings and the late hours, we would, this was a hobby project. It was no big thing behind it. It was more, you know, can we do this together? Like, it was, you know, with the full support of the team, but it was kind of also something that was like never really officiated to be anything more than an experience or an experiment. Refined the project back and forwards on the improvements, my feedback, I want this, can it do this, can you make the system do this. I need you to be able to unlock this. Can we have this feature? I want this. And I did a lot of asking. I'm sorry on Chris and the team for the demand. They're like, oh, is it worth it? This guy just asked for more. And I was like, and then again, there was no plans to commercialize what I was asking for. They're like, why are we spending all this time on something? And then I was like, look, you know, let's just see. I just want to push the capabilities, almost like a car company or, you know, Renault or Ferrari wanting to do something Formula One, like you manufacture everyday cars. I want to produce something that's tailored for pure excellence and the best out of the tweaking that we can do. We got it to a point, you know, obviously collaborated with independent barista who was looking for support, you know, met with the model, had a great story, really connected, and we went from there. Obviously, remembering it was COVID times, we couldn't connect in a room. So the first time we came together was 4 days before the comp, stripped everything back, and started to build a performance, you know, in 3 or 4 days that was the new one with, you know, how we were approaching copies and just trying to get the best out of it. And I honestly thought that experience would take me 3 or 4 years to even have anyone make a finals, let alone, you know, have copies roasted off this unit that would be celebrated as that year's best expression. So that was, you know, that initial part of the development was on quality. We went away from Milan super stoked. The team was so proud. I think the thing for me which made it all special was not myself. Like, I'm a pretty quiet and shy person. I don't like the front spotlight in anything. I like to achieve, figure out what's going on, and then fade back into the shadows, because that's where I feel more comfortable behind and tinkering than speaking. But for me, the proudest moment was just the joy, success, and pride of that brought the Cafe Logic team to know, hey, we're not, you know, a domestic pop-up unit or Kickstarter, or, you know, we can produce something to be serious. But we were lost. Like, you know, they have a model on the market right now. You know, the features and the way in which I was profiling was quite difficult, that it would take quite an experienced user to utilize this machine, and utilize the profiling and how it worked. So it wasn't really part of the demographic they were working on. So we kind of put it to the side, like, it's not going to be anything more than just an experience. I put that unit in my backpack, and as I said, I put my buying hat on, went to Origin, went to the farms, and that's when I realized something kicked. Like, I'm that kind of person that I like to help out. I don't want to do a farm visit and just rock up and cup and, you know, walk away and eat their food and be in touch. I want to be in there with them helping it. Like, it's a privilege for me to be able to enjoy their coffees. And, you know, so I'd open up, like, hey, I've got a roaster. Can we roast? I'll roast your samples. Like, you go and enjoy dinner. I'll stay in the hotel and I'll roast the samples. And from that experience, I realized, like, some producers were amazed that their coffee could taste that way. They've never tasted their own coffees how we, in, you know, a buying country or a cafe setting or a cupping thing, would experience their own quality. So to me, that was a really amazing experience. And then the second thing was, whenever there was a failed sample, if they'd already prepared the roast, I was like, hey, I've got the roaster. Why are we roasting? This is how it works. We can taste it straight away after. You know, give me the green and I'll make sure I give you a fair and honest feedback. And that way that coffee, their hard work, the 9, 12, 11 months, whatever it was to produce that coffee from, a, you know, seed to cup, it was valued. We actually gave honest feedback for what we were able to assess. And it wasn't just me brushing it off as, your quality is not worth it because it didn't taste good on a cupping table. And I think that experience made me realize the importance of cupping and sample roasting, and that transaction, that it's not something that should be for those who are privileged and understand roasting. It's not like we're competing on, I can roast this coffee better than you. It's a simple rudimentary function that's so important within our industry that if we don't do it well, it can give a completely jaded experience of someone's livelihood and product and their hard work. And for me, it kind of gave, I guess the birth of the link purpose is I want someone who is focused on fermentation agriculture to be able to experience and showcase their coffees with pride, as good as someone who doesn't know anything about coffee processing but knows how to prepare a green coffee sample. We need that ability that regardless of your skill set, if it's important to your position or role in coffee, you have the ability to produce a great cup of coffee. And I think that really set the link journey in motion. I came away from that, talked to the Cafe Logic team. At that stage, it was still just myself. Like, I had no company or backing to produce it. It was still on, like, can I figure this out? You know, how do I put my brain in the way in which I think about coffee into a digitalized version that can make that decision-making for someone who doesn't know, but also the way in which I think, if people know me well, is quite complex. It's kind of weird, and I can often be confusing. So I was like, I need to make it really streamlined and rudimentary. From that process, not only were we refining the firmware, the software, and how it worked, but I was like, I need a compass to be able to allow people to navigate through my mind and my thought process. The best thing that you can do in this, and what I've always said from the beginning, is you need data. Data has the keys to what we need. So thank God I was a little bit particular about capturing every roast that I would do, you know, volume by weight, densities, the moisture content, humidity, altitude, country, who grew it, where it was grown, what farm, what variety it was, what was the water activity, and then, you know, everything that I could assess from the green side, and then everything that I could then assess from the roasted side, like what time did that coffee crack, what was the cracking temperature, you know, what was the right profile within the system that worked, what was the development setup that worked, was there an optimized, you know, range that worked, did I enjoy this sample, did I not enjoy this sample, which gave me this huge pull. And as I said, like, we were doing a lot of roasting because I was trying to figure out how do I make this system easy. At that time, we were developing profiles and profiles and profiles, you know, based on all of the different coffees. I was trying to ask, like, give me the weirdest coffees that no one roasts because I want an answer for those. So we developed out all these profiles, and then it was just me tinkering one night. As I said, a lot of it was done after hours with you know, people who were interested in it. And I started to see a pattern. I was like, what are all of the successful roasts that I said, yes, this was a good expression this got? And within that, one thing I realized is for this particular unit and the purpose of sample roasting and cupping, there is a certain optimized time range that we have profiles done under, and when I do that optimized time frame and I have it cracking at this point with these development parameters, that is a good coffee. So then I had something tangible to draw on. Okay, that's my ideal scenario. I want that result, but then how and why did that work? What in the green data taught me that that profile at that cracking point and under that finishing time worked? And what I realized is there was four data points that started to correlate. And those data points gave me pretty accurate, and this is goosebumps. Like, I'm telling you, like, I felt electric when I saw the pattern. I'm like, surely this is not. Like, it's like stumbling across, the Holy Grail. I'm like, this cannot be genuine that this pattern actually works. And it was the fact that, like, most importantly was this, what I would call volume by weight. Volume by weight density is essentially for a select volume of millage, the weight of what will fill that vessel. It's a very rudimentary measure, but it's very inexpensive. It's easy, and in some degrees, it gives you a data point. The interesting point about that is it's only relevant if everything's done on the same measure. And thank God, because I was roasting such small amounts, the measure which I was using needed to be small. So we're talking 100 gram samples. So everything was done in the same tube. The original version of that was this little gold tube that I didn't even know where I'd got the first version of it. But every sample, the 5 or 6,000 samples that we, you know, I built out the data pool from the beginning, I'd always measured in that tube. And from that, that number was a really strong correlation when I put that against the process of the copy, the variety of the copy, and the humidity of the copy, that would tell me within the optimized time range that I'm trying to roast in when that copy was going to crack, with certainty of between, you know, I'm going to say 30 seconds, but it's more around that like 10 to 7 second mark, which I could predict before I roast that copy. And to me, that was like, wow, like with that, I can have people get a starting point where you can weigh these points in, put it into a, you know, a graph or a system. And from that, it's going to tell you, this is the best starting profile to give you a first reference. You know, first profile might not be perfect, but it's going to be right within the box that's going to give a fair and honest expression of that copy. I think for me, it was like fair and honest expression was what I was wanting, that it just represented the organic compounds of that coffee accurately, without it, you know, giving a jaded interpretation that roasts may play an issue in here. So figured out this is a system that I can use. Obviously, I mentioned that humidity is also very important. The reason I chose to disclose or remove that from the solution is my whole idea was to make it more accessible. If we needed to buy more expensive equipment, it started to then make it not as relatable. And it would also mean that people would need the same equipment. I was looking for equipment that was able to be scaled, but it was also inexpensive for its, you know, value. And then from the first data points already, I could actually turn off variety as a process. People will see within the app, and there's obviously questions within the app I end up writing, like, why is variety there? I'm going to bring it back in an update. But for now, the solutions were so close to being almost perfect first go that adding that priority in was not necessary. I could actually do it off a two priority system. Then the idea was like, how do I write the app? So I know me and another gentleman, I was like, I've got to write the algorithm. Everything was done as a Excel-based solutions. And I would code it and work on it and rewrite it and figure it out and back and forwards, like, can the solutions work? This one didn't work. What did I do wrong? This, you know, is changing. This is changing. Cool. Had everything ready to go, happy. Wrote the first algorithm, manufactured a 110 volt unit. And then I realized that the power of the Hertz, the voltage, because that's our supply of heat, completely changed the solutions. So I had to then go back and write a completely new solution system just for a different power source. And within that, you know, once we got the app working and, you know, the power source, the other things that come to mind is, okay, frustration in roasting is we talk about portability. Portability isn't putting it in a case and being able to move it. Portability is that you can have that unit and it prepares the sample the same way where you take it. And one massive challenge that we came to was the effects of altitude and air density. And as you say, our roaster is air-driven, and most fluid bed roasters, you know, have always faced this market. Like, you know, if we want true unit-to-unit profile sharing, our calibration from factory is really important. With the Lynx particularly, we developed a custom calibration system to make sure that the units themselves, one unit to another, was almost identical duplicate of how it would behave. It was a very, you know, rigorous process. You know, the team within Cafe Logic, like, it takes them sometimes 30 minutes to just get one machine calibrated perfectly. It's not a quick process. They need to continually do it. And I was like, we spend so much time getting that calibration point specific for Link and how it works, and then to have someone alter that calibration point in order for their environment completely undoes all the work that we've had to have a system that standardized that people can use everywhere. So lingering on my shoulders is how do we attack altitude? How do we combat it? How does someone in Bogota at 2,000 meters use the same profiles as someone in, you know, Sydney at sea level? So that was a fun and interesting exercise. I can go into that. That was a 7 week, 45 farms, five countries adventure to write that one. And, you know, I thought I had it cracked, and it's kind of like that thing. You think you have the answer, and then another challenge amounts that when you go up, the compounding effect of air density, it increases. It's not standard in the lower altitudes. It actually compounds and gets more. The smaller amount that you go up, the larger the effect. So then factoring that into algorithm was pretty fun. But what we ended up, you know, developing, and once we tested it and we took it to all those scenarios to make sure that, hey, if I'm telling you that this has worked, like, I'll do it myself. You know, I'll go there, I'll spend the time away to actually make sure it does work. And why I'm on the road, I can rewrite the updates, because, you know, and relay that back to who I'm working with, you know, from development or the app, to be able to update my solutions. And one thing which I think was, for me, like, amazing is we'd written in this fan speed trim that you could temporarily change the calibration to your location and save it. And I developed obviously all the profiles when I'd initially wrote them was in Sydney, and I took a profile that I'd written in Sydney, designed for 100 gram batch, to a farm called Santa Teresa 2000 in Costa Rica. Altitude, I think at that time, you know, this is the first high altitude roads I'd done, because they had a great mill height. That was around 2,300, if I'm not mistaken, meters above sea level. Put the coffee in, altered the batch size, changed the power, because obviously we're running on 110 voltage, and push play. And I was like, look, you know, if this works and it successfully follows the thing, it turns the coffee correctly, the volume of air passing through is correct, then I'll be confident to say that we actually have a form of portability that you can take this roaster, whether it's at sea level or above, you know, you have the ability to take that with you. And I think the importance of that is when we roast coffee, we're not always in a beautiful cupping lab and perfect scenario. Sometimes we've got a PowerPoint sticking out from an extension cable, and we're in a, you know, tin sheltered thing where this is where coffee comes from. If you travel to farms, like, this is the reality of coffee. We don't have these perfect environments. So we need a way in which you can have some standardization, some system that can cope with where we're going to take coffee and where we want to prepare it. As I said, I know I spoke a long time. I can tell you thousands more stories like this, because it's a deep detail, but these are some of the things that we've thought about. It's not trying to recreate something that we already have. It's trying to address, these are real challenges. We are facing these. And then what is the solution to be able to fix it? When it came to the link, like, our solution was, I don't want to, you know, the hardest thing and the expense in anything comes with hardware. The more detailed the hardware, the more expensive the materials, the more expensive, the unit will then eventually cost. But what is inexpensive is your time to develop something digital. So if you put your resources towards digital data, towards refinement of software, the refinement of firmware, and as I said, like the Formula One team, you've got a standard engine that you're looking to get maximum performance out of and capabilities, I really do think the potential is endless. Like, and that's what excites me about it. We want to extract together with the team that's now obviously supporting this. There's a big, you know, network of Cafe Logic members, like, you know, Chris and Rich and Sean, you know, that are in my team, and myself and Jerome, you know, on our sides now collaborating with ideas, like putting our collective energy towards it to further refine the tuning of this. Like, we're giving the feedback that we want as we're the drivers, them as the technicians and the engineers, putting their efforts and resources into allowing what we're requesting to be, you know, to be realized. And I think the cool thing about this is it's not just myself now who's working on this. We have a huge network of great coffee producers and baristas celebrating the system and embracing it, and not just using it, but contributing to the improvement, which I think is really cool. Like, it's, you know, I couldn't imagine that I would have something and be working with, you know, some of the farmers I am and getting their data to improve the system, and it, them coming to me and saying, wow, like, this is making my life better. I'm like, well, you're already so famous, you're already so successful. Like, how is this? And it's like, well, it's allowed me to realize, you know, what I can do and focus more on my coffee techniques over, you know, spending more time behind the roaster. So yes, that's super rewarding as well.
And that's something I realized when we were together in Athens at the Nucleus booth, that there were a lot of baristas, but in particular, a lot of all those really great producers and really like famous quality-driven producers that came to your stand and were talking to you and were obviously already using the link since quite some time. Yeah. And that's also something I thought, because you said, like, it was one sentence a bit earlier, that many of the producers, they don't even know about the coffee they produced. And what I like about the link is kind of, if I'm listening to you, you could have written a book, or, I mean, more than a thesis, even like a big book about all the data that you've collected and all the insight that you gathered during developing the link. And at the end, you put it in this machine and made it in a way that, yeah, anybody can just take the machine, use it really simply without any knowledge, and then do a nice coffee. And I think this could be probably something that's going to change the coffee world quite a lot, if the producers now have the access to a machine, which is also not too expensive, can roast their coffee and finally understand what they're producing.
Yeah, of course. And as I said, like, for me, that was the most valuable thing, is it's not just in the quality, it's also in the efficiency of what you can do. And right now, you know, if we want efficiency, we look at timing, batch-to-batch protocol, and what you can get off a roaster is, you know, it's spending more time. You know, it's part of the reason that, you know, Cafe Logic-based systems and the link utilize the, you know, no-drop temperature roasting. And that's batch-to-batch protocol. It makes it quicker if we don't need to preheat the roaster in between batches. It gives amazing benefits to how soon you can taste the coffee. But also within that system, part of what we were looking to achieve is efficiency, that if I could start and finish it, I could roast, you know, 5 to 7 batches in an hour. If I could make it a more affordable unit, instead of me only roasting 5 to 7 batches, we could scale it like you would have your old Probatino 4-drum, you know, gas burners, that you could have 4 links side by side. You could be running them in a completely automated fashion where you're only listening for crack if you're an experienced user. You don't need to listen for crack if you're not, because it'll just give you an average development percentage, and it actually allows you to do other stuff. And it means that your process, instead of someone who maybe misses a step or that coffee's challenging, it gives it a direct expression that you can actually scale it up. It's also part of the reason why the roaster itself is not entirely needed to be connected to the computer. We have the digital version for those who like to see what's happening from a roast perspective, and from, you know, live roasting, which is also a big thing that we look to bring in with this model. But also, everything's internalized in a mode that we call analog, that every function that you do in the digital space and what you see on your computer is able to be done directly from the unit. And I think what's nice about that is, as I said, we're looking for resource-based limiting the need to buy more things, that unless you're doing an update or a software base, like, everything's internalized in the unit. It's completely remote. You can take it up into the mountains where you don't have Wi-Fi. And as long as you've got it, it's all loaded in there, like, you can run everything that you would as if you were connected. And I think that makes it scalable for many units. And as I said, like, some of the people who have been so gracious to adopt the unit and contribute, all thanks to them, because it really helped. You know, I could list a few great producers who have been really beneficial and baristas in this process, to allow me, you know, to be there and roast their coffees with them, and then from that actually implement the Link system into their own protocols and get benefit from it.
Nice. One aspect I would like to talk about is this possibility to immediately drink the roast out of the roaster, because this is something that usually hardly anybody in coffee roasting is really believing, because we know coffee needs to rest. And if I'm talking about this feature, everybody's a bit skeptical about it. But at the end, you proved it, like the current Bird Barista Champion, his coffee, I think you roasted it about 2 or 3 days before the World Championship, before you went to stage. So it's kind of working. And can you tell a bit how you found this possibility, and maybe elaborate a bit on how it can be used in daily use?
So this isn't something that we had it set out and discovered. This is just purely something that was discovered after the fact. As I said, batch-to-batch protocol and efficiency was, you know, part of the reason why the Link system and the Cafe Logic system, they do not have a preheat. The amount of thermal energy that you need to get into a coffee with at least the batch size to the available power that we have is, we have greater available power than what we need to have enough thermal mass convection in order to get it to that endpoint in a set amount of time, which means that we don't need to do the traditional way of preheating. Many people have heard this analogy from me in the past, but when we, you know, we do a traditional roasting, the reason that we are preheating is to get some form of kickstart or slingshot momentum into the profile, that we actually get a start so that we can end the coffee at the time frame that's not going to draw out, because the conduction time needed for the amount of heat that we're trying to apply is not possible. So generally we drop the coffee, hot environment, cool or room temperature product, it equalizes out, the coffee turns, and we start the roasting process. Within that, and this is again, as I said, a theory of mine, someone's got a better view of it, I would love to hear, but this is at least how I understand it and interpret it, is it's almost like cooking a steak. You know, when we cook a steak, we have a hot environment, we have a colder product, and when you apply that to the hot environment, the outside almost seals and sears and has the penetration of heat more on the outside before it ever penetrates the center. In the process, you're also trapping in some of the juices, which makes steaks, you know, to those who eat them, delicious. But it also means that because we're sealing, I think in some ways, the structure of how tight the porous nature of the coffee bean is together, we actually have a slower release of CO2. It's my belief that by having a no charge system where we're starting the coffee roaster and the green together, there's a homogenization of heat transfer. When we heat the unit up and the coffee, it actually heats it up simultaneously together. And it's almost like more of what we would experience of a sous vide style heating application, where internal and external seems the same penetration of heat because it's coming together at the start. And I believe that something in that process leaves the coffee beans a little bit more porous. So that means that when it's generating that large amount of CO2, which is obviously in the roasting phase when we're developing the most of it, not as much is actually being trapped into the coffee beans themselves. And straight off roast, when we're approaching these samples for cupping or for filter, even for espresso, we have coffee that has less of that trapped CO2 in the beans, that's not needing to be broken down or fractured to expose more surface area in order to have that degassing process, because the coffee itself is still degassing. And I think the thing about that which really surprised me is it's not just this coffee has less CO2 off roast and has less CO2, which shortens the ageability of the coffee. These coffees still behave the same way. They just have less CO2 presence in perception of taste than what you would traditionally have off a coffee. And I think opportunity of this base system is amazing, because then it allows us as an industry to stop roasting, which is something that happens in the past several days beforehand before we can enjoy it, and bring it front and center and actually make it a part of maybe future coffee experiences or how cafes are interacting with coffee or even changing the service. You think about you're spending over €100 or $100 a pound on a coffee and you have to roast a kilo of that and you're probably only going to sell one or two beverages a week or a day if you're a really busy customer. You know, as soon as you turn that coffee product from green to roasted, the diminishing quality is much faster, and which is degrading. Which means, you know, if your minimum amount you would roast in the past is a kilo, you have to roast it all, and then you have to do freezing techniques and invest in, you know, those things to preserve it in order to get value. It makes it less sustainable to run that coffee. But if you have a system where it's almost roast to order, you prepare it in smallest batch size you need. If you want to do 50 grams, you can do it 51 or 100 grams at the top end and serve it to that. It allows you to control the process of how you can serve and maybe change the coffees, or you can bring roasting as part of your experience. That people, and I don't know if you've ever had it, Ingo, but I've had it, you know, customer knowledge of what coffee is sometimes limited. You have people thinking that coffee comes brown in a sack, roasted. You know, the fact that it's a green product and it's agricultural based and you've got all these wonderful farmers, you know, behind it, I think having people that understanding and bring it forward can have massive value in what we do.
Absolutely. And I think that's also beauty about, I mean, if people are getting more into coffee roasting, also understanding the differences that are within green coffee. And I think we could probably talk for hours now also about green coffee, but maybe I want to end this session also once I have you in front of me in this recording, get a little bit into tips or hacks or, you know, special approaches on the machine if a person now has a Link roaster, maybe also CafeLogic roaster, because you know these machines so well, and of course you developed all the systems with the app so that people can find the profiles. But maybe there is on top of that, like some cherries or some things or hacks or tips that you could give people in addition. Get kind of all out of the machine.
Of course. So I think it's one of those things. The Link system is designed for the person who knows nothing about the coffee. But I've also hopefully managed to write lots of Easter eggs in there for the experienced user as well. Like, I see a purpose of it being all values of coffee professionals, whether you know and you've been roasting for decades or it's your first time. I think one of the features of the Link, which is really misunderstood, is the advanced dial-in feature and what that is within the app. For people's understanding, you know, the way in which this solutions generally go in the recommendations, 80 to 90% of the time, the first suggestion is pretty much right within the money window. But let's say you have an anomaly where for whatever reason, your coffees are normally cracking for that profile pack. And if you read the user manual, you'll know, let's say you're using the D-pack, that the desired crack time is between, let's say, 5:50 and 6:05. For whatever reason, if that coffee cracks at 5:40, you know, you log first crack, DTR kicks in, you have the right development percentage. It's a quicker roast than maybe what's ideal for that particular pitch and structure of that profile pack. And the idea behind the advanced dial-in function is, you know what, I think it would be a overly biased or confident claim to say one roast and it's perfect. Like, I was like, look, you know, but I would say the reason I did that is within two roasts, I can get you closer to a perfect roast. And understanding how that system works, essentially, you know, what you would do is you select the profile that you use and you enter the cracking point of what happened for that profile and the profile pack that you use. And from that, I've written an algorithm that thinks, because everything's based on it all gelling up together, an optimized roast time, an optimized cracking point, an optimized development percentage, an optimized increase. If for whatever reason you're in the box with the initial suggestion, but you're in the lower part that you're applying too much energy, so it's cracking early, or you're in the later box that you actually could utilize a little bit more thermal energy throughout the starting part of the roast and the pitch of it in order to make it crack in a more optimized time range for the, how the profile set up, that feature in itself will give you the suggestion based on the last data point it doesn't have. The data points are essentially predicting, you know, initially when it's going to crack in temperature and suggesting a profile. But by having that last data point, which is that the cracking point, the advanced dialing function can maybe suggest up or down a better profile. Generally speaking, you know, for every 5 seconds discrepancy from the target, it's a 0.5 step in the profile numbers. A lot of people have always asked in the profile numbers what they mean. One is a sequential skew code for the algorithm to work. But two, the reason they step in 0.5 is I've got enough of a variance of like when you're 5 seconds out, you go to the next one up or down. I built it to be able to compensate and that, you know, you can utilize that feature. So I would definitely encourage people once they get more familiar with it, they're happy with their roast. If they're not just roasting one sample and cupping it and moving on, but they're actually looking to perfect something, utilizing that feature is going to allow them maybe to see a better suggestion than the initial one. The initial one's always going to give them an honest expression, but I would say that sometimes, you know, based on those inputs, the second suggestion from the advanced dialing is going to give them, you know, a more closer to the perfect roast. Which I think, you know, is definitely underutilized and maybe people don't quite understand. Because as I said, there's layers to this onion and I keep on adding layers into it. So that would be one definitely act that I would say utilize that feature more if you're repeating a coffee. Some other, you know, elements which we're working on in terms of the unit is if anyone is experiencing like any connection issues, where initially the USB tether is not connecting, the best thing to do is run the unit with no coffee in it, let it do the heat too fast trigger, you know, unplug the tether, turn it off, hold in the play button, turn it back on, which resets it, and plug back in the tether and continue to hold it, and you'll notice that it will connect straight away. That is something that we've also addressed and fixed in the newer updates of the firmware. But if anyone's running old firmware while we're getting to that point, that's just a little thing within the system. Other aspects, like I think I would love to do some videos with you on profiling. I think that the system itself and why I put so much emphasis on the fact that we've done the profiles is there is so much detail to those profiles. But I would love people to maybe understand a little bit more what some of those details are. So, you know, you can take a link profile, extract it from log and edit that to custom your, you know, taste, and then save that into your user inbox. Like, this is not a dictating system that you only use it how we've intended to use it. The V2 update is going to allow you further customization of the profiles from development percentage, et cetera. But I would like people, you know, who are maybe developing something on, we're trying to give you the framework, a framework of a good quality roast. And from that, make your own expressions, you know, share those profiles, like play around with them. We want you to have the ability to do that. And, you know, it is my goal to allow the system, you know, people understand more about it so they can, you know, make possibly, and I would say most likely even better solutions and roasts than I would be able to create myself. We have an amazing coffee community who's, you know, once they understand something, they can create great things. So, you know, I would like more users to have that functionality as well.
Nice. Hey, thanks a lot, Sam. Thanks for, I mean, first of all, for developing that fantastic tool, that fantastic roaster, putting all your knowledge, experience, and passion within them, that tool that now is here for all of us to use. Thanks for sharing all that you shared in this video. I would like to pick up this, you know, like the offer to go a bit more into profiling in another video with you, and maybe if people have some more questions that we can elaborate on, or some more details they want to know about the machine, write it in the comment.
Yes.
But inside of that, I just really want to thank you for everything, Sam, and it was fantastic to have you here. That's it. I hope this video was helpful for you. If you want to know more about the Nucleus Link, then click on the link here. You find a lot of information on our website. Also follow our channel because we're posting a lot about coffee roasting machines, green coffee. And if you have any more questions, then you can always come back to me. I look forward to hearing from you, and you find my contact on roasttravels.com.